serious student offenses. Preparing for this topic, I had to think of Jesus when he was with that woman who was being condemned for her adulterous life. And his concluding words to her were, "Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more." And it was not that Jesus didn't reckon with her issues. We're going to talk about that today. We have to reckon with these things. But in the end, he was redemptive. He was giving her freedom. Serious student offenses. These things surely don't happen in our schools. I called my one brother-in-law who's been teaching for 18 or 19 years, and I said, "Jonathan, what about serious student offenses? What can you tell me?" And he said, "Ha, they never happen." And I waited a little longer, and then he started talking. Don't underestimate children. I didn't say be suspicious of them, but don't underestimate children. Our school children, even when they're church members, can have serious offense issues. And so in our discussion today, we want to look at some specific ones. I would like to have discussion from you. I'm going to let you tell me what some are before I give the ones I have, and I think they're going to overlap. And I would like also some discussion on what we should do. That's what we're here for today, right? To talk about how to deal with these specific things. But before we move into that, I would like to give you four main points that I think we should use as we deal with these issues. Number one, this is maybe the journey of dealing with serious offenses. Number one, there's realization. You know, that first dawning realization when we get the phone call of what's going on. And then, number two, there's reaction. And that can be bad or good. We want to talk about how to react to these things. You know how it is, that first surge of blood goes through your body, through your brain, and then we have a pretty immediate reaction. Probably shouldn't act at that point, but there's a reaction. Third, response. There does need to be a response. This becomes responsibility of administration. Teachers, of course, are involved in this because they are the on-site administration, but the broader board does become involved. Sometimes after the fact, okay? Maybe the principal is the one who gets the dawning realization and the reaction and the response first. Maybe the board gets it later. But we still, when we get that first news, there's always this process. And then the fourth one is restore. This is why I talked to you about the woman and Jesus giving her hope, saying, "Neither do I condemn thee." Isn't that the real goal of us dealing with serious student offenses? Maybe we lose this sometimes in the heat of working it out, and we feel like it's dealing with the issue that's the goal, but isn't the end goal to restore, to bring back, to give opportunity again? That's Christ-like restoration, redemptive. And so if you want to put Jesus on this one, you could, because it takes a lot of Jesus Christ to be able to restore. And sometimes we can't restore to where it was before, unfortunately. But this should be our goal. This is what controls our surge of blood and our reaction and our response is this right here, the restoration. In the end, another few things I'd like to mention right here before we get too involved in our discussion is that there are varied levels of board involvement in these things. Some boards are significantly aggressive, and others are significantly non-aggressive. And so sometimes we as administrators need to take some cues and do more. And sometimes we as administrators maybe need to take some cues, and if things are being handled reasonably, not overreach. Because we do empower our educators. We give them a responsibility. And there should be, I hope, in your school, some kind of a chain of command here of what happens in a case like this. And I'll get you to verbalize that shortly. But just keep that in mind. And so my brother-in-law, who has taught 18 or so years, told me that his board feels impassive to him when he's got issues. And I thought about that later, and I thought I should have told him, well, that's why you're there, because he's not impassive. He has energy, and he's aggressive. And so there's a sense in which sometimes the Lord balances that out. But we do need to be involved. The board should be closely connected and should be informed. There has to be an information chain for these kind of things to be dealt with in a productive manner. Another thing that needs to be part of this dealing is that the board needs to be confidential. You have a wife. I'm not saying you can't talk to her about it, but maybe you should know the bounds of what she could carefully handle, because this kind of information needs to stay in the board. There will be plenty enough stories floating around if action's taken on significant things without lots of gossip. So just be careful with it. And as a board, don't kick your teacher's feet out from under him or her in a difficult situation and then kind of walk away and insist, you know, so if we get down to the reaction point, but we never give a positive response, we just knocked our knees out and then we left them with the problem to deal with. So understand that it's our calling to follow it through, make sure that the thing is responded to and restored as possible. All right, so the next thing I'd like to do is have some open discussion here on what is your chain of command, or in the case of a serious student offense, what would you expect? If I could have just a couple of you give me feedback on this, this will give us a little bit of a spectrum. Have a volunteer? Can you stand up and tell us? Teacher talks to the chairman, and then the chairman would use his discretion at what point the rest of the board finds out. Is that right? Or would he contact them immediately? So the board would become involved pretty much immediately. All right? That's one scenario where teacher to chairman and the board comes on as a group. Any more? Someone have a different scenario? Stand up and give yours.
Or a board chairman contact with the principal because their child was involved. Became very personal.
Okay. And then the rest of the board. All right. So board chairman might make a personal contact, and in this case, principal's child was the one involved. Okay. This brings out some of the sticky side of it, because sometimes it's our child as the administrator that's the offender. There's another scenario where the teacher would contact the principal, and then the principals would see if they could resolve it on that level, and if not, then it goes to the board. The board will be involved, but they would become involved in a secondary level instead of the immediate action. That's another scenario. Presently, at our school, we have the scenario that the board chairman is also the main principal, and I'm his assistant, and so we kind of pull it all together in one hit. But we have to be careful that we don't misstep then, because the board chairman shouldn't make decisions with his fellow principal. That should be made with the board as a group. Okay, so just in those scenarios, be careful that we keep the chain of command where it needs to be. If there's a decision that needs made on a board level, and the chairman makes it with his assistant principal, we left out the rest. But if that's what's expected to be made as principles, then he could function as a principal, deal with it, and then bring it back to the board at a later moment. Any more you wanted to share? That just gives you a couple of illustrations of ways we work with these. Any more? All right, let's move on directly now to things that we would call serious student offenses. And I would like your input on this. I think there are a number of things that we probably would all agree on are serious student offenses. So does someone want to give me an illustration? Doesn't have to be one you know of, but what's an illustration of a serious student offense? And then we want to talk about how to relate to it. Right. Any form of bullying. Bullying would be verbal abuse or severely unkind treatment to, usually it's specifically to one person. It might come from multiple people as that group, as that spreads, and it's targeted at a certain person. Right? So it's open. Let's hear some discussion about this kind of offense. What do you think we should do? So we get this realization. Maybe the teacher calls us, or maybe Johnny tells us, "Dad, you know what they were saying about David today?" And you say, "Well, have they been talking like that?" "Yeah." And then at that point, we just, the realization hits. And then maybe we need to let Johnny out of it now. What shall we do? Let's hear your thoughts. You have to decide. You're the board now, right? This is the tough decision. And sometimes we don't have lots of time to think about it ahead. It's, the thing comes to us, and we have to make some rational decisions. So after the realization that there's bullying, what would be your instinctive reaction? Tell me that. We can kind of follow this pattern. What's your instinctive reaction? What was yours? Right, so the reaction is to say, that's serious. That shouldn't be. That needs to stop. That's our reaction, right? Now, what is a reasonable response? Let's follow it through. What's the response? All right, first thing is, if Johnny was the one we got it from, just take that information, conceal your reaction. Don't say, ah. You could say, well, just make sure you stay out of it. But that's it. He's done. And then you begin the process of feeding that back, depending on what your responsibility is in the board. If you're the principal, call a teacher. Go see the teacher. Again, remember I said, don't be critical. Don't come at it that it's their fault. Ask questions. Find out. Do they know anything about it? Does anyone know what's going on? If there are two principals in your school, you should what? You got the lead, and you have an assistant principal working with you, what should you do? This kind of thing comes up.
Communicate.
If you get a mile down the road before you remember to talk to your assistant, or maybe you're the assistant and he's the main and you just took it and ran, you're going to create other stresses in dealing with it. So let's work together. Just because the lead came to my house doesn't say that I now own the case. We're going to work on it together. All right, so the response is to go and find information. What if there is none? Comes up dry. Teacher doesn't know anything. Assistant principal doesn't know anything. Nobody else has been talking about it. What should we do? This is real life. All right, so the monitoring needs to kick in at this point. Should we set a trap up? Set up a trap, see if we can catch them. Monitor and alert the people that need to know. So maybe the whole teacher team should become aware of this, because often bullying goes from bigger to smaller, smarter to stupid, more able to less able. There's always something involved. might be room three to room one, room three to room two. There's always a down in it. And so usually this is going to involve more than one classroom, often, not always. So at this point, principals can discreetly pull their team together and say, we might have a problem. Could everybody just stay tuned in? Don't react. Give them direction right here. Tell them, don't react to the situation. If you catch it, follow the chain of command. At our school, if there's a serious issue that needs action, the teacher is to call the principal before action is taken, especially on the level of corporal punishment. That needs to be, even if it needs done now, we can pull the child and go make a phone call. Can't get the principal, go to the assistant. Can't get the assistant, call any of the other board members. Chances are you're going to get one of them, right? Second opinion, that's what that's all about. In the back. I asked him what he did. He said, well, the one case, it was the principal's daughter who happened to be his own niece. And he said he did nothing because the principal said, you can't do anything. So he followed his chain of command instead of overriding and using what may have been actually a reasonable response, but he followed the chain of command instead. Then it becomes a bigger issue. Because he couldn't deal with it on the level that he should have, then sometimes we have to go to the next level. And maybe the board can help to figure out what to do about it. So these things happen. This can get really crisscrossed and sticky. And if you are the principal or you're one of the members and it's your child, what should you do? What if it is your child? Let's talk about that right now. Comes in, here it's your own child. Then what? What would be discretionary at this point? Step back. If you have an assistant, hand it to him, hand it to the board chairman, say, listen, brethren, you make the decision. I will step off to the side. If you want to get a reasonable resolution to it, that's probably what you need to do. That's hard to do. It's my junior. You know, I'm on the board. Now I'm caught in the crossfire because, you know, it's one thing to sit here and talk about someone else's child, but when it's my child, yeah, that's difficult. So you'd be better to go and pray and let these brethren try to work something out. Remember that they're having a hard time doing it because they know you're on the board. It becomes a challenge. But we want to do it. We want to bring it to a resolution. We want to get the thing taken care of. All right, anything more? So we're using the bullying scenario. So the response is passed down the chain, up the chain, however you want to say it, to a point where it's time to give the teacher direction on what to do about it. Maybe we found evidence. We're ready to deal with the issue. Sometimes this is a very short turnaround time. The evidence was there right away. Teacher calls, we've got it. What shall we do? And someone needs to give direction. Other times, like I said, it's a prolonged process. These things will come out. Children are just so human that if the problem happened once, it's going to happen again. Sometimes it's pretty tough to catch it, I'll agree, but we don't have to set up traps to try to create situations to see if we can catch what's going on. Don't forget to pray in this response period. And then, depending on what it is, we need to give careful consideration. So back to the thought of bullying, I don't personally ever have related to this. I've not had this happen. So does someone have a thought? What could we do? What should we do? That's what we're here for today, to discuss. Anyone? What would be a suggestion you would have?
So we communicating with the parents, support.
All right. So there's a part of it where there's communication with the parents. So we have the board representation. We have the teacher involved. At some point, the parents become involved in being knowledgeable of what's going on and maybe of the action that's being taken. Sometimes, well, okay, so boards learn to know the parents, and so there are some parents where we might need to take an action. We might need to inform them and take an action. There are other parents where we could inform them and appeal and then take an action. There's some cases where we cannot wait for their, am I saying it correctly? Wait for their approval of our action. What would you do for bullying? Someone have just a simple answer? There's a lot of ifs in that, of course, but do you have a thought for us? Specific?
Not really, except for maybe a community awareness. Okay. There could be a value or a place where there's a parent-teacher meeting interview and the bullying, mocking topic to be presented and the whole church works together on it.
Okay. So he's saying that there might be a place for a group awareness, not so much saying, hey, now we got a bullying situation going on out here somewhere, so, but where we would address it and say, here's Bible principles, here's how we relate. Sometimes if it's confined to an upper grade room and the teacher has maturity, there may be a place for him or a board member to have a devotions. We don't like to tie devotions into disciplinary action, but we might lay out principles and then work later on the actual issue. Be really careful about combining them. But there is a time to appeal to our Bible knowledge. Our children grow up and this, we expect them to have a Bible knowledge, and so we have that appeal to them. The world doesn't. They're lost. They don't know what to do about it. This, these kind of things, there's, it's, what can they do? What can they appeal to? We can appeal to a godliness. All right, and then there needs to be an effort to restore. Sometimes the erring one is repentant, and that's great. Sometimes they're not. If this continues to be an issue and becomes more open and blatant, there might come a time to expel from school, and we'll talk about that shortly. All right, let's move on to another one. Someone else have one they want to mention? If you want to mention expelling, it's fine. Another serious student offense that you'd like to talk about today. Right. Disrespect, you're thinking of when it gets to the point that it's blatant, you know, the teacher gives maybe especially an older student, it can happen in younger ones too, but gives them direction and they just nothing. Shut down. Shut up. No response. Or maybe in an indiscreet one, they'll make faces behind their back, stick their tongue out, shake their fist. You know, things that only certain people are supposed to see. Or worst case scenario, maybe they start vandalizing the teacher's vehicle quietly, sabotaging it. Do something. It's pushing back. Realization. So we get a knowledge of this again by one of several ways as a board. What's your reaction to this one? What's probably the most normal reaction to a stubborn, whether it's young or old school student? What's your first feeling? Might not be sanctified, but what would you feel like doing? All right, put some force on and some volume. And both of those are going to have to get submitted to the Lord, right? Because they'll become unproductive at this point. Maybe there's also a wish to inflict some pain to help break out of that. Response. Let's think about a reasonable response to this. This can get pretty interesting. I'll just give you some scenarios. A couple of teachers gave me scenarios of this very thing. Here's one. There was a sixth grade boy. He just had a rather bad attitude. His family had moved into the area for a few years, and then eventually they moved back out again. This didn't happen to any of you here. Might sound like it because these scenarios pop up. They're just kind of familiar. At first, the parents were on good terms. Once the teacher needed to start putting some pressure on to get cooperation out of Johnny, the relationship went downhill some. So he needed to give a written book report. And the teacher knew this young man had a history of not doing what he needed to do, and then he would give excuses. And so he, three times prior to book report week in the English book, very carefully, specifically told him the class. Now, we have a book report coming. It's going to be right here. Make sure you're getting ready for it. Make sure you're reading your book a while. Three times he did that. When he got to the week, the boy said, got to the lesson, the boy said, oh, didn't get my book read yet. And so the teacher said, well, I gave you clear warning. So he said, you must take it home tonight, and you must bring it back finished tomorrow. It was a written book report, so it was a written assignment that was going to be due tomorrow anyway. It was completely fair and in line. He said, you still must have it finished when you're done reading the book. He didn't give him a loophole. You know, Johnny will get the loophole. He'll just... Well, you can figure what happened next. What happened?
Parents called.
Dad called. And Dad was not in a good frame of mind. And so, brother teacher said, okay, I'm willing to back down to giving him 2 weeks to do it. If I know you're involved and making sure it happens, I give him 2 weeks. No, Dad said no. That's not good. Won't work. And then he pulled in a few other things, gripes that he had, started stacking them up. And so that was it. There wasn't much more to say. It was unresolved. Half hour later, phone rang again. Who was it? Dad again. He had been thinking. And he had another load. Same thing. Just more of the same. Boatload this time. So, upper grade teacher alerted the school principal so that he knew what was going on. And lo and behold, Johnny came to school the next day with the book report finished in his own handwriting. Teachers can tell if somebody else in the family did the writing. In his own handwriting, with a note inside that said, don't ask how it got finished. What do you want to say? How should we resolve this one?
Ask how it got finished.
All right. So one suggestion is to ask how it got finished. Does anyone that would be reserved about that? I have a reserve about that. For one reason. What is it? What did we get? What did we get out of this? Cooperation. Though not willing, right? It was cooperation. So this problem will surface when? Soon again. And maybe we can work at it again. And by the way, Father acted, we might need the board to be involved more. See, on the first, this was on a teacher level. He told the boy, this is what you need to do. It was reasonable. Take it home tonight, finish reading the book, get the book report done, bring it back. So Dad's involvement became the complicating point, though he was not supporting it. And that was a bigger problem. But that's where the problem went from a normal school transaction to a bigger issue, right? So that process is still current. It'll come up again. That's how it works. What would you respond as a board now if this information comes to the principal? Principal shares it at the board meeting. What would you say? Let's have a little bit of board discussion right here. What would we say to this? We can say satisfied that we got cooperation at this level at this moment, but don't think that it's all taken care of, right? We got our head in the sand if we think this won't come up again. So what do you think? Would there be a point for the principal or the chairman yet to make an appeal to the father because he was not involved at that level up to this point? And then, if there's still rebuttal, then let ministry work with that part of it. Now, of course, we have to keep working with Johnny on the school board level yet, right? He's probably going to do something another day. won't choose the game when it's his turn, or refuses to play at recess, or has his own agenda, or you name it. You can figure it's, depending on who he is, it's going to come up. So before we respond too fast and put it all the way over, let's follow the biblical appeal up through, and then at some point, more brethren may need to appeal to the Father. Have you ever found yourself on this side of the stick? Something came home and we said, that's unreasonable. It just feels unreasonable. But at least, can I appeal to you as board members, at least you ought to know that there's another side to the story. Maybe some of the dads who've never been on the board, maybe we could give them a little more leeway for not understanding that. They should too. But before you go down the road of unreasonable, please try to work it out. Support the teacher. It won't break my child to even do something that's a little difficult to get done when he's done. And he might learn something. And he might learn something about me in the process too. My attitude about the teacher when he realizes I could probably be a little miffed about it. So. All right. Well, what is the resolution in a case like that? What is the restoration? Hope would be that if the father could support the board, that his son could someday come to also accept, at least accept, direction. He might never appreciate it being the groundwork that was already laid negatively here, but could he at least accept? All right, let's do, I have some more. We have time to cover a few more yet. What other ones are you thinking of? The one we just had, I would call, you know, blatant disobedience, or even in the irresponsible neglect category, where a child just isn't cooperating. More.
Immoral conduct.
Right. Immoral conduct. I have this one as bathroom issues and moral issues. There's often a connection. And I remember when I was teaching upper grades one year that the school principal came to me and said, you picking up on anything? He said, my boy came in from school and said, there's some indecency going on in the bathroom. You know, that's the last thing we want to hear. You know, we think we've been doing a pretty good job as a teacher. You as a board, you know, things are going good. And we have one of two reactions at that point. What might they be? What's the one? Can't be. No. Not my boys. No. Don't underestimate them. Remember that. Don't be suspicious. But our children are just as carnal as we've been, too. What's the other response? Swinging all the way to the other side of the road. What might we do? All right. Get out the ammunition. Down with it. Shame. And there is shame in it. Moral issues, there is shame and reproach, but to our children, they will not be helped through dealing with these issues by shaming them as such. The shame needs to come from a realization of wrongdoing, not from us shaming them. This becomes difficult, and in that case, I never physically saw it. The principal had us together as a faculty. This is a sensitive nature, so he had addressed me first because it was going on in the boys' restroom. Then when we were together as a faculty, he just said, there's been some conduct issues going on in the boys' restroom, and so as principals, we're recommending that the boys' restroom door be propped open. The way the barrier was in ours, it was still discreet to have it open. And he said, and Brother Noah is going to be in the hallway when students from any of the classrooms are using restrooms at recess time. We usually, everybody did it right before they went out, and we were on about a 3-minute bell cycle, so in 9 minutes, all three classrooms cycled through the restrooms and out. Of course, that meant some sacrifice on my part, because if I was running a class, we were upper grade room, and so we were usually the last ones this semester, so I needed to be available 6 minutes early for when room one went through and when room two went through. Okay. Did I be a policeman? I was an undercover one, I guess. I tried not to police, but I'm telling you, I did make myself there. can you stand in the corner of a restroom and not feel like a policeman? Not too much. It kind of feels awkward. But I didn't explain. I didn't say anything. I figured the boys that had the problem would know why I was there, and the rest of them wouldn't know what was going on. And I just quietly stood there, didn't give them bad looks, just was there. And then as the weeks went by, I tried to stay tuned in to what the principals were, you know, if there was any more complaint. We finished the school year that way. Then over summer, we broke that and started back in normally the next year. And so I would suggest that the restoration of that, if there's no further violation that we are able to pick up, that we would restore it for sure before the new year starts. We don't want to just keep on and on and on holding that thing. Did the boys figure out what was going on? I'm sure some of them did, but I'm not sure that some of them ever did. So. Is there anything more you wanted to say on that? This could include obscene literature too. And I'm sure all of you have, you know, a negative policy to obscenity. If that's found, that's usually a little more of a hard evidence. And I would suggest that that ought to be handed to the board for discretionary action. It's not a real small matter, obscene literature at school. Any of you want to say more on that? Suspension.
Mm-hmm. However, the board met with the primary offender. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why or where the dad was, but they personally
met with him personally.
And it worked. The
okay.
Guy broke down.
Good.
I think not there or shortly thereafter, he was part of the
okay.
Change. So
wonderful.
It changes. You know,
right.
There's different ways to work with it. That worked out.
Mm-hmm. And these are very, some of these are very case sensitive. I think we need to stick together as a team and work it out and sometimes get a, you know, does anybody else have input? What should advice from others who've dealt with it to know how to handle it? Because it's not a small issue. Our Christian day schools, we want them to be a safe haven for our children, but they've got carnal natures, and so the old devil is lurking around every corner, and when the seeds start sprouting and growing, it is just ripe for trouble. And so We need to take action in a reasonable way. Restoration, as was mentioned, the most wonderful is when there's repentance and the problem ends. Sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes that means we need to expel. So let's talk about that next. How many of you have been involved in a child being expelled from school? Raise your hands. Okay, thank you. As you know, this is not a nice thing to have to do. And it's not a nice thing to have community talk about either, because we would wish that we never had to in a Christian day school. But realistically speaking, if there's a problem that is very problematic and cannot be resolved, then the best thing to do is to remove the offender so that the school can continue to function. We have 15, 20, 40, 60, 80 other students that are all going on pause if we can't bring rest back to the school again. Yes, they'll come and they'll study, but that whole school atmosphere is going to be charged, and so it needs to be taken care of. Tell me a little bit. So we mentioned moral issues. What other things might bring expelling from school? You tell me. What else do you think might cause needing to be expelled from school? All right, persistent foul language after it's been addressed and there's refusal to respond. Okay, another one. All right, constant negative attitude. Now, this gets really difficult to deal with because an attitude, we usually work with the actions. And so we almost have to let the thing get bad enough that we expel because of specific actions. Am I saying that right? or can we expel just flat on an attitude? It's open for your discussion. You tell me. What do you think? All right, we should probably go first of all and make sure we're clear, teacher's clear, and what makes it the easiest in this case is if the parents are clear. If they say, brethren, this is not the way we want our child to act, you do what needs done. That's not usually the way it is, though. Usually, if there's a foul attitude, there's some inheritance that took place. May I say that carefully? But in some cases, there's an obstinate young person who has parents who really, what to say, bored, just do what you need to do. We don't know how to help our child either. All right? This, of course, has to be a board decision. This, I don't think there's any experienced teacher or set of principals that would have, I think, authority to expel without the board giving that authorization. This is not a small matter. If there's going to be expelling, there also needs to be a clarification of what could bring restoration. Someone give me an illustration. What could bring restoration? So we say this child is expelled until, tell me. We can't just expel them unless we decide it's for the rest of the year, and it's, you know, then we need to clarify that. But what are some ways we might say this? Right, until there's a committed answer that I will cooperate, then we would allow the child to come back to school. Okay, that's one. Any other ones? That's a very specific one where maybe we feel like as a board that we could touch Johnny if father were willing to let us, but so we expel the child because he will not cooperate, but we have to have a cooperation of the parents to let the board give direction to this child before he can return. You see what I'm saying? This tests brotherhood relationships. It's no small matter, and we want to handle it very carefully and very prayerfully because there's probably no right way to do it. It's going to hurt no matter. Just think, if the board needed to expel your son or your daughter, just think about that. That's not a small matter to us as parents.
I haven't expelled her for a week.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did it help?
No.
Yeah. And so it's a difficult thing. It's hard to know. And does the board always make the right decision? Board, do you always make the right decision? No. And sometimes on hindsight, we say, well, maybe we shouldn't have done this. But we do what we can to bring, remember I said the end goal was restoration. That's what we're working towards. All right. Let's move on to some more things. Tell me some more you'd like to talk about. Take one more yet. The question is, in a difficult home situation, maybe where there's not a solid Christian home, and we expel a child. And I can think of an exact case of that where a young boy was part of our congregation before we lived where we do now, but this story came up recently because he actually came back and made friends with some of the brethren that had been there a long time, but he was in our school, he had become a church member. He was expelled because of significant difficulty. His father was opposed to him being in our church. His mother was a member too. That boy eventually ended up in jail. And his father, for years, said, "It's your fault because you expelled him from school." That's what he said. This is real. It's something for us to think through. And I've heard several of his brethren say, just in the recent past, you know, that we don't know. What should we do? So, but they did the best they could. And I think that's where we must work from. We must be open. Let the Lord work. And I don't think that it was the right attitude for the father. And actually, the son was not of that attitude. He said, "Well, you did me a lot of good." That's what he told his own dad, that they did me way more good than harm. But his father was bitter. He couldn't. So it becomes a question. So it's case sensitive. Maybe we think that through. Is there another alternative? Is there some way we could work on it in a very difficult case? All right, I'd like to mention just a few more yet as we wrap it up. What about boy-girl improper relationships? I think this needs addressed, first of all. We don't just move to extreme reaction. But these things do need addressed. I remember one time when I was in school, there was a third grade girl, I think, whose mother died from cancer. And one of the other little boys in her room gave her a hug that day that her mother passed away. And I remember I was only a schoolboy, so I only, of course, heard it from the side, but it made some ripples. And what would you do? So, it will take wisdom and discretion. I think if it's upper graders, older ones, it will take significant, careful handling. Contraband objects, we don't have time to discuss all these, but I'll just mention some ones that I have heard and have seen come into school. Cell phone, an airsoft pistol, magazines, the brother's glasses from home, other forbidden objects, like that are specifically given on the one of the schools I taught, there were to be no wristwatches. Boy came to school wearing his wristwatch. He wore it at home. So it became an offense, and I had to deal with it because he was breaking a rule. I didn't make a lot over it. I didn't take it as a serious offense. I addressed him one day, and I said, "Are you aware that's not permitted at school?" And he said, "Oh, yeah." I said, "Well, you know what to do with it then." He took care of it. Or maybe I had a case where a young man came to school quite often without his belt on. And maybe that doesn't seem like a big issue to you, but I told him that I'd like him to wear his belt to school. That's just in our setting that we would appreciate that. And he couldn't remember to bring it. So I just simply brought an extra belt. We kept it in the bathroom drawer, and when he forgot his, he wore mine. That soon took care of the problem a couple times. You know, my belt, he was a skinny red-haired boy, and my belt was way too long for him. So I had to put holes in it, and worked out. All right. What about cheating and lying? Well, our own children sometimes put us on the hot seat on this. What becomes difficult is when maybe there's suspicion of lying, but there's no clear sign of it. And I would say as a board that we should, if we have a teacher coming to us and saying, "I think this child is lying, I think he's cheating, I think," that should be a first sign of us to just say, "Okay, tell us the information. All right, now here's what we tell you to do. Just let it rest, and you alert me the next time." And then there's sometimes, if a teacher can't decipher that, there's a place for us to step in, come visit school, maybe have them show us what they're interpreting as lying or cheating. This can get pretty sticky. Thank you for your discussion. The Lord bless you, especially as you relate to serious student offenses.